they just say things for the sake of it, of like being rude.
Yeah, there's just got nothing better to do. But like, you know, there's that
you
one
brushing
instance.
Your teeth and they're like, she does that fucking wrong, doesn't she?
Oh yeah, like anything for clout. And I'm like, I'm literally just brushing my teeth, but cool.
Welcome back to another episode of Managed. I'm really excited to have another one of my clients on. You may know her from Love Island. You may know her for her political work or her activism, or the host of Girls Know Nothing. She's Sharon Gafka. So we've just celebrated our 2-year anniversary. Well, just over that now. It's like 2.5.
No, it's not. It's not. Wait, what? Yeah, it's 2.5. Yeah, 3 years in. No. No, it'd be 2 in.
No, I think it's already been 2. I don't know. It's
been
a long
time. It's 2 years
in
summer.
It's been a lot. It is technically meant to be halfway there.
Oh my God.
It comes down to, when did you get voted out of Love Island? And that's when we started.
Yeah, pretty much like the week after I got voted out of Love Island.
Yeah.
Quarantine finished and my first day out was with you.
It was a good day. But that's, so my whole thing was, we're celebrating our 2-year anniversary.
Yeah.
It's been a long journey. And I actually love the story of how we first met. Because I think it summarises both of us. Because I actually think, Sharon, with you, people think you're quite a serious person.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that we've always battled with. But actually, Sharon is one of the least serious people I know. She's very serious when the camera turns on. And
yeah.
I think, you know, you have Sharon Gafka and then you got Shaz.
Yeah, and Shaz is pretty much 90% of my personality. But that's just the 10% that people see.
I think it's because you speak about very serious topics, so that's why it is that. But let's take it back to the beginning. You went on Love Island. That's how you know, kind of came known.
Fell into your office.
Wasn't here either, so no. You know, so you came out, and I remember we messaged you because I really loved you on the show, because I loved how misconceptualized, I guess, you were, because it was the fact that you were a strong woman. And I know that if I went on camera, I would be painted out to be a dick. Because I'm also very like, me and you are very straightforward with each other. We don't really beat around the bush. But it's supposed to be a working lunch. Like it was a lunch.
A 1-hour meeting.
1-hour meeting is what we penciled in for. What time did we get home?
I got home at 4:30 in the morning.
I made myself ill.
I told my mum, I was like, can you just look after the dog? I'm going to go for a meeting. I'll probably be a couple of hours, I'll be home. And then I didn't go home till the next morning. And it had a very hefty Uber bill for me.
Yeah, I had a big hefty one too. I thought, though, I am like, you're a lot further out than I am.
I think my Uber bill was £200, yeah.
And mine was 60, okay.
It was worth it, it was worth it.
It was worth it. We ended up having a heart-to-heart in a black cab.
We did, yeah. When we were waiting for my Uber, we had a little cuddle and a cry in the back of the black cab.
It's so interesting because I just feel, though, that really summarized our whole working relationship of how we've ended up kind of coming together. You know, we launched a podcast and we did that together. And, you know, we've done so much together. It's been like a lovely experience.
I consider you now like a sister as opposed to like a manager.
I would say the same. I think that's the difference, though, because I think a lot of people, you hear about people having bad management experiences. Mm. But I think that's our difference, is the fact that you've not had one, because I think it's how much you let people into your lives.
Yeah, I'm a very open book, like, you know this. With everyone with everyone that's in there, I'm probably too open.
She also has keys now to the office, like a buzzer to get into her office, which is dangerous because she does just come in when she wants now. And also, you get ready in our offices, but we don't really even pay attention to you anymore because it's just that, oh, Sharon's here.
Yeah, it's just standard day.
Because you're here every week because you film your podcast here.
Yeah, and sometimes when I'm bored or in between stuff, I just come in and waste everyone else's time instead of waste my own doing something else.
I know. I'm always like, Molly, come on, do something.
We get work done.
Do you?
Promise. Scouts honour. Promise, Scouts honour. Not to get Molly in trouble.
So you came off the show and obviously there was a bit like, you said there was nothing off limits. And I did the same thing with Grace when I had Grace on here. We very much spoke about things that you probably wouldn't have spoken about with other people because they wouldn't know the ins and outs. But you had a really tough time when you came out. And I think people did know that anyway. But I think you were very much painted out to be a bit of a bitch, if I'm honest. And knowing you, you're probably one of the most kind-hearted people I know. Like, you will go above and beyond for people. if you just look back at that experience now and knowing how much you've developed as a woman, what would you kind of say to yourself then? Because I think I remember how you tried to keep it in, but there was a couple of days you really did break down, especially because people were so, it's like when the whole internet turns against you.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird experience because I knew it was going to happen before. So I remember I think it was one of my final interviews. They were like, you know, it can go either way on the show. You could be Britain's sweetheart or you could be the most hated person. And I was like, I know how you'll portray me. And I was like, I will be a villain because I'm educated, I'm well-spoken, and I know exactly how I think and how I feel. And I will make that known. And, you know, I don't often gel with a lot of men. You'll know that because...
Neither do I.
Because of that. And I knew it would happen. So, you know, I wouldn't change what I said. I said what I said for a reason. Whether those reasons were shown or not, that's irrelevant at this point. But, you know, one thing I would say to people is that if I'm such a horrible person, if I'm such a bitch, then the reaction of the other islanders when I left proves it that it's not true.
But also, one of the things I remember you telling me was they do show you privately, right, all the press. So yes. you knew what you were coming out to.
Yeah, so I was in a holding villa because we're a couple of days ahead of you guys in terms of what you see and what's
been recorded.
Oh,
really? I didn't know that.
So they were having debates about how to get me home before my episode had aired.
Also, to bear in mind, this was COVID time too, yeah. So you had to isolate for 2 weeks when you came out.
Yeah, so they were debating about how to get me back to the UK incognito mode. So as in removing all of my luggage so it wasn't bait, making me wear sunglasses, a mask and a cap. And I was like, why don't you just let me stay in Mallorca until it's aired? But I had a meeting with the press team and they tell you everything. Mm-hmm. So any story that's written about you prior to going in, anything that was written about you when you were in there, and if anybody in your life. So you tell them there's a pre-warning, like if you think any exes or friends or whatever are going to come out and sell something on you. So they'll tell you if that's happened. And for me, the biggest one was obviously arguments I had. A particular argument I had sparked a massive debate with everyone that had any form of social media, and it basically the whole of the internet turned against me. And I was getting abuse at any angle, even from people that should technically be classed as allies because I was defending them. Mm-hmm. It was pretty heavy going. And I consider myself a very thick-skinned person. Like, I don't really care what people think about me because I know what I think about myself. But that was the hardest period of my life. And the 5-day quarantine period when I returned to the UK, you know, there was because of COVID, we had to stay for 5 days, made sure we had someone come to my house to swab me, make sure that I wasn't COVID positive. And that 5 days, because I live on my own, so I spent the entire 5 days looking at my name.
I remember your brother used to come and visit you at the end of the drive and just wave at you.
Yeah, and drop off my food shop and stuff like that, which was, he hated me for that. But
You're just staring at your press, aren't you? It's like, yeah, horrible.
And reading every single comment that was coming in, every message that came in. And I put myself into a really deep, dark hole of all of the things that I knew weren't true about me, but everybody had thought about me. And it's like, how do I get myself out of this so people know that this isn't actually the person I am?
When you went on, it went into the villa, obviously I know that you weren't really trying to be on the villa. Like, no. It was like, but do you think now you've achieved everything you kind of set out for? Even if you didn't mean to, you obviously make a conscious decision to go into a reality show. And I really hate it when people say, oh, you know, I just sort of fell into... But you made a conscious decision to go into that show, yeah. Even if you didn't think you'd get on. Did you kind of always think, right, okay, I'm going to come out and this is how I want to do this? Or do you think you've sort of fallen into it a little bit based on your moral compass, the things you've always stood for, and the fact that, you, like you said, you are educated and, you know... you're incredibly intelligent, and you had a great job before, you know, so you didn't really need to go on the show. You never needed the money. It was never about that for you. I think you've used your voice in such a powerful way, but do you think you've achieved maybe what you set out to do, or do you think this is really like a, thank fuck I did this?
Yeah, I think for, like, people that don't know, it was a conscious decision for me to apply. I'd never been actually a massive fan of the show. I'd never really watched much of it, and it was my friends that made me do it, and they thought it'd be, and my ex-colleagues, they thought it'd be really funny. So when I got it, I was like, right, I have to have a sit down and genuinely think, like, is this something that I can risk my career for? And I just thought, you know what, like, you're only young once. So I did. And I actually had no expectations when I was going in, what I was going to come out with and what I was going to come out for. And I think I've said this to you, like, on multiple occasions. If we'd never met, I would have walked straight back into my office, sat back down at my desk and carried on life.
Because you had a lot of meetings. I think
I did.
One offer you Coachella tickets to sign?
Yeah, literally. Loads of people offered me the most random things. And I think this is probably...
I offered nothing except my company.
And a good bottle of wine. I think at one point you actually turned around to me and said, unless you can drink this shot of tequila and eat this oyster, you can't sign with us.
That doesn't sound like something I'd say.
And I'd never eaten an oyster in my life before that moment.
Stories coming out about me since I started this. I think I am who I am, aren't I? Like, yeah. It is. You either love it about me or you hate it about me.
No, I did love it. And I think that I had loads of meetings with people and I knew what I wanted to get out of this. Like, this was my, I said to my parents, because my parents are very traditional, Eastern European and Asian, like, why did I do this in the first place? And I said that I'm going to give myself a year. Mm-hmm. And if I can't see something genuine long-term and that I'm really in love with, like, I have to want to do this, then I will go back to work in a year.
Yeah.
And even though what I'm doing now, I fell into it, but consciously.
Yeah.
Because you know, people always say to me, oh, she'll do anything for camera, anything for airtime, anything to be on TV, on the news. Do you think I want to sit there and talk about the stuff that's happened to me every single year that I've been alive? Mm. Not really. But I know that it's part of who I am. And I've been doing this all of, like, as soon as I could walk and talk, essentially. So now, in hindsight, I'm grateful. But I think the first couple of weeks when I left, I was like, what the hell did I do this for? I genuinely hated myself for doing it. So...
It's so weird because I remember when we first met, you were one of the scariest people to come because you had very big goals.
Yeah.
Not in terms of scary as a personality. In terms of the goals you had, it was like you always said you wanted to end up as like an MP.
Yeah.
And I thought, fucking hell, I know nothing about the government. And I was like, I can help you with the skill sets I've got. But, you know, there is a risk that this might not work, you know. You know, and I think for your strategy of how we've always strategized with you quite heavily in terms of PR and the brand you associate yourself with. And, you know, I don't think everyone could get away with some of the things you've done because you are such now a voice for women. And it kind of leads me on. I don't really need this, actually. I'm just going to get rid of it.
She knows that much about me. She doesn't need notes.
You know,
it's quite scary.
I don't need... No, do you know why? Because I just know where this is going to lead to, which is kind of all the things I write down anyway. Because now you have led yourself into being this voice of women. And I guess one of the things I was going to speak to you about, because I think it's something that we never really put out there, was how some of your fellow islanders at the time, when you were speaking about being spiked and standing up for women and those legislations that you worked incredibly hard to change. We went to Parliament, me and you together. Yeah, I went to Parliament. I sat next to Sharon as she spoke and I was like, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I just remember seeing in the corner of my eye one of the MPs in the meeting going, can you move so you can take a photo?
I know. They made me hold the camera. That's why I was a camera woman. But that's literally my life, isn't it? Because always like, can you hold the bags? Can you take the picture? Which I don't mind, actually. But there was people who felt that you had said that for publicity rather than the actual reasons. Because I remember the conversations before we ever went out with that story. Because it was... I think it was coming up in Parliament. That was the whole reason that you brought it out.
Yeah.
And you did do like hundreds of testimonies. You know, you did a lot of work for that. So I think it was very belittling when someone literally said, you've done it for fame.
Yeah.
So how did that make you feel at the time? Because actually I wanted you to speak about it because I wanted to really back the fact that actually there was a very conscious decision with a game plan behind of how can you help other people?
Yeah.
And the stories you got, they were hard to read. I got a few through your inbox and I remember sitting in the bath like, oh God, it's too much.
Yeah, they were very heavy. I think, do you know what? It's not surprising that the islanders that were very against or had the most to say about what I do were men. Men that are no longer in my life, men that I no longer have contact with for that very reason. But, you know, we went out for dinner and I told them, like, this is what I want to do. This is, like, my dream, my goals. And they laughed in my face and they said, you'll never do it. It's not possible. You know, you should just stick to what islanders do and be a pretty face on Instagram and all that stuff. And I remember leaving very upset. Like, I actually cried. And I don't do that often. You know, I don't. Yeah. So, like, for it to, like, really upset me was like a big thing. And I think that, you know, I've always wanted to help. I always wanted to be part of something that was bigger than myself. That's always been my life goal. It doesn't matter how I ended up doing it. And I'd been very, very selective about who knew about my spiking situation, because I found it really embarrassing, really dehumanizing and demoralizing that this had happened to me. And also because I know exactly what the intention of the perpetrator was, what exactly could have happened to me if my friends weren't so proactive at the time.
And you've got, I've met all your friends, and they are a great bunch of women.
Yeah,
and
very strong women.
Unless you knew them, maybe also, that's why it feels sometimes like where someone might feel that it's unbelievable, because it's your friends are doctors, they're lawyers, they're clever women. So it's like they're switched on. It's not like a bunch of drunken young women going like, oh, she's just drunk. You know, that is very different.
So, yeah, we found it really... It did anger us when people were like, oh, well, you're just young, drunk, irresponsible women. I was like, well, you don't find any of them drunk and irresponsible and you need them in A&E. Mm. So, you know, I think for us it was really annoying. But I a lot of university students were coming out and speaking out about their stories. And I was like, do you know what? If an 18-year-old is brave enough to talk about something that's happened to them and how scared they are, then why shouldn't I be?
Actually, it was the needle time. It was the time when people were getting needled. This is why you came out with it. So
a lot of needle spiking.
Rethink back to
a
when...
A lot has happened since then.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was during the needle spiking situation. Yeah. And like all these young women were standing up for each other. And I was like, you know, I just left the villa and people were so interested in everything I was doing. And I wanted them to be interested in something that was important. And like I was using like basically being under the spotlight at that moment in time for something good. And I'd worked with a lot of local women in universities that were near me. And then it kind of just escalated from there. People were starting to, because they think they knew me, they found it easier to trust me and tell me things they would never tell anyone else. And I was like, well, I can't sit on it and do nothing with this. And you know, I've got the background and the skills and the knowledge to do something with it. But you know, we were out together one time at the peak of all the testimonies, and you actually found me unwell in a bathroom during dinner.
Oh, that was
I had
horrific.
A panic attack.
It was really bad. It's with me and my friend Rosie.
Yeah,
and that was actually, God, I forgot about that. That was horrific, and we had to carry you down to your room. We got you. We showered you, we put you to bed.
That was the pinnacle of our friendship.
Do you want me to
right
remove
there?
The showered bit?
No, that's fine. My manager showered me. That's fine.
The thing is, I think though, you were in a, you did have a panic. It was a bit, it was the most intense panic attack I'd ever seen. It was petrifying.
Yeah.
And it was literally one of those ones. At first, we thought you were joking. Like it was like, so we laughed and then we were like, oh,
no, it went
fuck.
0 to 100 very
like,
quickly.
Really
didn't it?
Quick, because you were being sick. Like it was a lot. And then, you know, no offense to Rosie, she's not the strongest woman in the world, but like it was kind of me me in dead weight.
I'm sorry. I'm very heavy when it comes
and
to
we
dead weight.
And we were trying to feed
well.
You Doritos.
Yeah, I actually keep haven't eaten a bag of Doritos since that day.
It's a shame, actually, because they're good for crisps.
I remember waking up the next morning wrapped up in loads of towels because you guys are trying to keep me warm, and I had loads of Dorito dust across my mouth.
We didn't leave you until you were ready to come off the floor because you were on the floor for a long time.
I was on the floor for a long time.
You told us you to sleep on the floor. And then when you finally said you wanted to go to bed, we were like, right, okay. But I think we were there for about 5 hours because it was really intense. And I think people think panic attack is like a little, like it's not, it can be any form. And I think it's because it was so intense. You were reading hundreds of these emails and letters. You got actually more testimonials than the government and the police force, which, you know, credit to you, because that is absolutely incredible that people trusted you. And if you don't remember correctly, I remember reading one of them, and one was from down the road where I live.
Yeah.
And in a curry house. And I remember I was like, fuck, it can happen anywhere. And people didn't believe her because she was a woman in her 40s. And it was just a crazy experience. And I couldn't believe it. And I said to you, like, oh God, I feel really disturbed by this. And you're like, I've read hundreds of these. I was like,
yeah, I think because I mean, I've worked in projects before where you're reading stuff that can be very detrimental to your mental health. And I've seen an impact it can take on members of staff's like well-being. And I really didn't want to put that on anyone else because I put myself in the position to be on the receiving end of these messages. So I didn't want to, you know, they sent them to me because they trusted me. I didn't want other people to read them. So I personally read every single one. And that's a lot. 1,500 emails or messages with quite graphic content is very, very hard to read.
And you wrote a report after that, and then you submitted to government, and that's where we kind of went with that. For anyone who doesn't know, do you want to explain the next stage after that? Because I think it's kind of been revoked slightly now, isn't it?
It's very hard at the moment because so I submitted it and the Home Affairs Select Committee put together a list of recommendations for government. It was basically to be stricter on licensing of venues. And
it was also a lot about bouncers because of bouncers having due diligence and understanding the difference between being spiked and being too drunk because a lot of bouncers, they would just assume the same and kick you out.
Yeah.
And if you're...
the most vulnerable point in your life, it's not good.
Spiking affects men and women. You saw that straight-handed.
Yeah, and I think... So it was one of the... There was a list of recommendations, but they didn't... None of them have really been implemented. And it's kind of like... It keeps dipping in and out of the media cycle. And I feel personal pressure because if I don't talk about it, then it does leave the media cycle. Yeah. So to have to be on it 24 hours a day... constantly with all of the other commitments I've got is, and I don't get paid for any of the spiking stuff, regardless of what anyone believes. I've made £0 off of any of this. So I've worked for free on every single thing I've done.
I can vouch for this.
Yeah, because you haven't made any money on any of it either.
I have not. But you wouldn't want to monetize on someone's suffering. So,
but then I do have to make money elsewhere to be able to pay for that. So like having to do all of that, be on it all of the time, and then having to do work that does pay me and pays my bills is very, very hard. So at some points, I feel like I'm working enough work for two people.
Yeah.
So it's intense, but you know, it's coming back to the cycle again. So it's time to gear up and ready for going into battle again.
But it's actually interesting, even like when we spoke about it and everyone else, you know, even just conversations, there are so many people we know who've been spiked. You know, I got spiked in New York, which I think I told you about.
Yeah.
And that was quite scary. And no one knew because I was working there. No one knew me. So it was my boyfriend who found it on Snapchat and had like red lipstick up my face. It was like really young. I was like 21.
Yeah.
And I was like having heart palpitations. And they're like, "What have you? Like, has someone given you something?" And I was like, "No, I've just drunk." And it was like the craziest experience. And that's why I think I wanted to stand behind you so much, because that was like, I was in a foreign country too. So I was literally petrified. And I was like, fuck. And everyone was like, "She's taken something." I was like, "I don't take things. Like, what? No, that's not, you know." So, and then even my friends, they've told me about times, or one of my friends' mums was spiked only recently. One of my friends was spiked. And you think, actually, the reason that we need someone like you speaking so frankly is because women are vulnerable in these clubs. And unfortunately, some people just find it fucking funny.
They do,
rather than they have a motive. They just think it's funny. And it's literally not, even like casually people go like, "Oh, if you're not going to have fun, I'll spike your drink." Cause that's not a funny joke. I've heard people say that, literally. And I think you've heard people say it more like this: "Say nothing, say nothing."
Yeah, literally. I think people think like, "Oh, you know, if you're not going to drink, then I'll put drink in your drink for you."
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant by the way. Not anything further.
But like, all like, you know, lads as jokes, putting it into other lads' drinks of like,
oh, you hear
Viagra
about that.
And all sorts of things. And it's, you don't know that person's health. You could put them in really
scary... I didn't know Viagra can give you a heart attack.
Do lots of things to you. So, you know, you don't know someone's health conditions. Just better to just, well, don't do it. But obviously there's lots of different reasons as to why people act so stupidly.
I think you're doing incredible and I think you keep going with that. And I'll help you always. But moving on to the next thing I want to talk about is, I think... you are one of the only Islanders I know who have managed to kind of shake off the Love Island name. Although we have spoken about it, it's more because I want to talk about your journey, especially since you've been signed with me, is, and I believe that you are the definition of what we especially stand for at HLD, which is personal branding, and how hard we've worked together on your personal branding, and also how hard that is for you to stick to that and not get sucked in by the media of where the narrative is taking you at any one point. You know, you've had to really stick to it. You know, I've people say to us all the time, you know, "Sharon's doing so well," and I'm like, but she works so hard. She wakes, if we say wake up at 3 a.m. because you've
got
a call, you know, a TV appearance at 5 a.m. she will wake up at 3. None of us are awake to wake her up. Like, no. We can't be, you know, there's no way you're catching me up at 3 a.m. You know, we'll tune in at 7, but
maybe watch it on the replay an hour later, but
no, I do try and watch it. It's sometimes when we're on the way in, but yeah. Otherwise it's the replay or the YouTube.
Sorry, I don't blame you.
But in terms of how personal branding's really changed your narrative, you know, how do you think you'd be here without such a hard, like intense sort of personal branding that we've given you, but also you did have to take a pay cut during that time because you can't then accept the boohoos or the fast fashion deals because we're aiming somewhere else.
Yeah, we turned down a lot of money.
It was like at the pinnacle when you were at your height as well, where you could have made such a shit ton of money, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
And it was like, it just doesn't align with what where we're heading. And it was very much, you had us, your PR, and you all together going, it just doesn't align.
It's the long-term stuff, isn't it? I think people have this weird thing about Islanders that as soon as you leave, you are instantly rich. Yeah, you can make a shit ton of money. That is possible.
You can also fuck it all up and spend it all too.
Yeah,
we've seen people do that too.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people do that. Like, there has been times where sometimes when I get up at 3 a.m. and it's pitch black outside and pissing it down, and I have to get ready, face hair, in a car on the way to whatever I'm doing, I'm like, could have just taken that money. But then I wouldn't be happy. I would be lying to myself if I'd be happy doing that. And I'm in this for the long run. You know, people, and it doesn't matter how many followers you've got, very few people last a long time if you do stuff like that.
But I also think it is down to, you know, the way your team and the way you are strategized. And I do think a lot of people come out of the villa, and I don't disrespect in terms of, like, I don't not respect people. They just want to go out, make a shit ton and go back to their normal jobs.
No.
Like, I honestly think, you know,
I get that.
That's smart. I also really respect some of the Islanders who have saved all their money, lived with their parents the whole time, and now they've bought a few houses and they're building a longer term business. I think there isn't a correct way of doing it. But the one thing I don't like, and this kind of leads me on to the next thing, is people who actively slag people off or try and destroy people's careers. And you've had it one time. I'm not going to go into it too much. But the fact is that I was with you at the time, and it affects people. And I think people really need to understand that council culture and anything else, it can really destroy people. To have the whole internet turn against you, it's kind of like, has no one ever had it when you went to school and someone's made up something you've said and the whole school hates you? It feels like that, but you're on the street and people are giving you dirty looks.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm one of those people, because of what I do, I openly accept that I'm going to get a high level of criticism. I can take criticism. If you've got something genuine to say that you think will improve anything, say it.
Can I say that, Sharon, you are the funniest person. If someone just says something ridiculous, like, you go like, oh, your makeup looks shit. She's like, oh, good one, Steve, you fucking bellend. And I think that's like how you deal with that, because I think that's important.
Yeah.
I don't think if you can't make fun of the absolute ridiculous comments, you will destroy it. Self-destruct in a hot second. The ones that let you take seriously are definitely the ones that are, you can kind of see why, because it's like they are a bit hurtful because it's to do with the bigger cause.
Yeah.
But in terms of like the ridiculous ones.
Oh, the silly ones.
We
so
send
funny.
Them in like to each other, don't we? We're just like, well, that was useful. Cheers, mate. Don't think that shade of pink suits me. Good one. Cheers,
my
mate.
Close friend's story on Instagram is literally me making weird comments about some of the ridiculous
men on TikTok.
Yeah. Gross. But like, it's not all men before they come for me as well. But no, it's just literally
just like
friends.
The ones that are really like, they just say things for the sake of it, of like being rude.
Yeah, they've got nothing better to do. But like, you know, there's that
you
one
brushing
instance.
Your teeth and they're like, she does that fucking wrong, doesn't she?
Oh yeah, like anything for clout. And I'm like, I'm literally just brushing my teeth, but cool. Like, it's, there was one particular instance where like, when you'd go for like character and it's like you're full on defamation and it's so not who I am, and everyone jumps on that bandwagon. They, you know, there was no substantial evidence of this apparent thing that I said, but everyone was like, no, she must have done it. And
I think it's because you are a strong woman. And you do speak your mind. It's so easy. It's kind of like, if you're the loudest in the room, you must have fucking spoke someone's shit, or you must have done this. It's, you know, you're almost punished for being a strong woman. And I think this is why we ended up together, because we're both strong women. It's so easy to criticize both of us.
Yeah.
Because we are... You know, you're not as loud as me, for sure. Like, I'm loud.
I don't know. You have a couple of glasses of Prosecco.
Oh, fucking hell. Get her drunk and she's loud. She dances.
Yeah, I'm wild one, but...
But, you know, we do not hold back on the things that we feel passionate about.
No. And I think in that instance, like, you know, people don't realise what they say actually does. Like, that one particular situation, I didn't even eat for a week. Like, I took it really personally.
Yeah, you did.
And you could see it in pictures as well. Like, I looked daunt. Ill.
Yeah. I remember, like, I came out of boxing and it was literally, I had about 15 missed calls to me. I thought, fucking hell, Sharon, what's going on? Someone died. And she was like,
might as well add.
She was like, it's all gone wrong. I was like, it's not, it's fine.
Well, because I thought my career was over, didn't I, really?
You did say that. And I was like, right, if this is the thing that destroys your career, that actually is a full-on blown lie,
yeah,
then fuck me, you know. You're in for a treat of a career, you know. It's, I think, you know, this experience that people in your position go through is so unique. There's a reason why not everyone's in this experience and not many people last throughout. So I think it's a testament to you and how you hold yourself, because not every day is easy. It's the same way with that in my job. I have literally had breakdowns to you and been like, I am so stressed. I just don't even know where to begin. And even when my personal life hits me, you know, at the beginning of the year, Sharon was a real rock to me. And, you know, you've had your personal, you know, it's, you need those people around you, but also sometimes you can't go to your normal friends because no one knows what it's like to be in it unless you're in it.
Yeah, I think, you know, if anyone's ever like listening and watching or whatever, and they think about this lifestyle, you have to be like the people that manage you, like around you, you have to trust them 100%. Mm. There is not a single ounce of my body, my life, my texts, my emails that you have not seen. So, you know,
see all your texts. I'd love to see them actually if you're offering them up after this. So going for lunch, so you know, she's openly said it, yeah, now. Yeah. I think I should see them.
Maybe.
I'd like to see her dating profile. That's what I want to see.
You see most of the bad ones, to be fair.
No, they're funny.
They are funny.
They're funny.
I'm very much a shoot you down kind of person.
This is why when we first started managing Sharon, she worked with her a Tinder campaign and she was blocked on Tinder. And every time they unblocked her, she got blocked again. And it made life very difficult. And I was like, I'm so sorry. She's actually been blocked again. If we could just
people thought I was fake that second time. The first time, a man's ego was very
large. So she
bruised.
Just took him down a few pegs.
And he took it very personally.
In a less than polite way. They were like, oh, we didn't know she's been blocked. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's my bad.
I'm surprised you're still. Are you on Tinder?
I am allowed back on it now, yes. Oh, I am.
Congratulations. You've gone a long way.
I am banned on Hinge now, so.
Sharon, I honestly, it's so funny how serious you are on like your topics, because you should really be a dating coach of like things to not do.
If I had like a podcast that was very much like the girls' bathroom, I think that you'd get a lot out of me. There'd be a lot of content.
Once
there.
Again, we'd have to re-strategize everything because yeah. It's completely off-brand. And I think that is something that's really important to highlight, is how important it is to stick to strategy. Even if the big paychecks come rolling through, you have to be strong enough, because, you know, there's always been times where we've sat there and gone, oh, it's a lot of money. And then you go, it's just not there. It's just not, it will set us back 5 steps this way when we need to be this way, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think I think one thing as well that sucks is when your life is in social media and people write about the nice things you have, or like you're seeing people on like fancy holidays and big cars and all that stuff. And I'm not doing that. It's because I know that I'm not there in terms of money, because I'm not accepting these big payday deals.
It's also, the question is, are they happy? And I'm going to ask you this now. Are you happy?
I'm happy, yeah.
But do you think everyone you've met is?
No. 100%. I
think that's an important question. People don't ask enough. Are you happy though? Well, you have a Range Rover, you've got a nice house, you've got all these people around you, but are
Range
you
Rover breaks down, that's all I'm gonna say. But like, you
they're
know
very expensive to run petrol wise.
You know that you know that I'm very perceptive on body language, on people's like cues. I'm very tactile. And like, you know, even on my podcast, the amount of people that I've had cry that I've never met before, because I'm so like, they find it so easy to talk to me about things. I know when someone's not happy, and I know why they're not happy straight away within like 5 minutes of having a conversation with them. And like, the amount of people that I've seen through this industry that are genuinely 100% not happy because they've done something that they think fits what social media or people on the internet thinks is what they should be doing is ridiculous. Like, majority of the industry would not be here if people were a bit more honest with themselves.
True. I just spoke about the podcast. How, in terms of your podcast, would you argue it's one of the proudest things you've done?
I would say so, yeah. I think, you know, the podcast is one of those things where it's, you know, I'm looking at other people and I'm like, oh, their podcast is started later than mine and is bigger than mine, but, you know.
Yours is more niche though, because it is a niche. And I think long term that will pay off.
Yeah, and it's like with the brand thing, like I've looked at times where I've been really upset because things haven't gone the right way, but I know that, you know, a year ago, I was upset because things weren't going the right way. but then they ended up working out. So I had to remember that exact moment when I was like, yeah, it did work out.
I think it's not because that. you want to interview people that people don't usually interview. It's always going to be harder.
Yeah, or see a different side to certain people. Because, yeah. You know, I've had lots of big figures and on the sofa, and they're always talking about their sex life or, you know, all of that stuff. And I don't want to talk. I mean, I do if you're going to go to the pub with me, but not on the sofa. Do you know what I mean? So, like, And I think a lot of people get more scared about
talking
about.
What's funny is the sofa's just here.
Yeah, I'm looking at my sofa right now. But
looking at the sofa.
It's like people, I think also guests get a bit more scared because they know that I'm going to tap into bits that they're not as comfortable or used to talking about.
Yeah, whereas, like, you know, when I spoke to you about doing this, I always made it really clear that mine was very different.
Yeah.
You know, because I am openly just quite eccentric anyway. I want to talk to about people about business in a different side, you know, and that's why I really wanted you on here, because I think I'm so proud of the things you've achieved with us. And the fact I love a lot of our clients, and I think you'd argue the same, they're one person on camera, one person off camera.
Oh, 100%.
And I love that. I love that I get to see both sides. But I think, you know, can I tell you the things I'm most proud of that you've achieved?
Oh, go on. Fill my ego. Go on.
No, you were the face of NHS cervical smear campaign. That was a big one. And it's not like that. A lot of the things I'm most proud of you about, you haven't been paid for, to be fair. And I think that's like a real testament as well, because, you know, you're raising awareness. The super drug itty ditty titty campaign was amazing.
That was a mouthful, yeah.
It is a mouthful. But obviously, because obviously you've been very open about the fact that your mum had cancer. That is like something that we always wanted to aim towards, is you being in touch with the things that were important to you. Launching your podcast with you was fucking incredible, because it was something we'd spoken about for about a year and we just kept pushing it off because we were like, it's just not the right time, it's not the right time. So when it did launch, it did really well. The first episode absolutely blew.
Yeah, it did, to be fair. And it was surprising. And a lot of angry people when it was slightly late.
Oh my God, I know.
When it was slightly late, I was like, don't hate me.
But also, we're the first to open up about, like, that we've made mistakes along the way, even with launching the podcast. Like, we've made mistakes along the way, but we don't pretend to be perfect.
No.
And I really hate when people pretend to be perfect, because it's like, you're learning a new kind of format. So you have to, you know, embrace those things. I'm trying to think what else I'm proud of. When we went to Parliament, the fact that you get mentioned a lot in Parliament for the work you've done, the fact that you stand up for women every day, the fact that you are you're not known for Love Island anymore. You are literally like, what's the word? An activist. You stand up for, I might get emotional.
Oh, totally, because then I'll get emotional.
I'm very proud of you. And I think you should be very proud of yourself too, because it's been a tough journey.
It's a team effort, you know. I'm just the face. It's a team effort.
People imagine getting really emotional.
Don't get emotional, because I cried at Lewis Capaldi's most recent music video this morning, so I'm already teetering on the edge.
I can't watch it, but I love him. So
no, if you watch it, you'll cry. I know you will.
No, don't, because Christmas adverts make me cry.
Should we, like, this year, you know, when I re-signed my contract, last year you almost got hit by a black cab and you had a kid face part.
No, wait, hold on. Do you want to mention that?
Yeah.
Go on. So... I'm going to like kind of start wrapping it up a little bit.
Okay.
But we are coming to 2 years.
Yes.
I think we've spoken about, you know, I don't really want to ask you what you have planned, because I want it to be a surprise, because we are working on things behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But we are going pageant wise.
We are.
We are aiming towards domination of the government MP Shazza.
Yeah, I'm waiting for to get my honorary doctorate as well.
And sorry, that noise will sound get me horrible on the, in people's
yeah,
heads.
Yeah, it will. And to get me on the honours list, I think Dr. Sharon Gafka OBE sounds really good.
It does, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Dr. Gafka.
It sounds like I'll go on a really weird advert now.
Yeah, no ideas there. But we are celebrating 2 years, probably in the next like month or two, seeing as I actually thought it'd already happened. So that's good. What you just mentioned before, what happened last... So we celebrated 1 year.
We did.
And we went... Well, I took you on a bus cruise around London. I thought it was a nice restaurant.
Oh, my God. It was the weirdest experience ever.
No, it was like the work... Like, honestly, it was funny, but I thought it was a really lovely restaurant. It had amazing reviews. It was a foodie bus tour around London.
I was in the middle of a protest outside Parliament Square. And then you were in a business meeting. You were like, should we go for dinner? I was like, yeah, sure. Let's meet halfway. I got there first. And I was like, Hannah, you know it's a double-decker bus.
The double bloody decker bus.
And we were doing a tour of London with all of these tourists who didn't appreciate that we were so British.
Open Table did not specify it was a bloody bus. And it moved and it went all around London. And to be fair, it was really funny. But they hate us because we were so loud. And
we were just British.
We just wanted to get drunk, which is what the Brits do anyway.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't either, to be fair.
No, neither do we. Oh, I like that moment. Thank you. Thank you, Siri. And then we also went like a team lunch, like dinner, to sort of celebrate. And it's a story that Sharon loves to share with everyone. So if you'd like,
it's the best story ever. Hannah turned around to me and was very annoyed that I hadn't re-signed for my second year.
No, she had to sign the contract. We were celebrating. She put it all over Instagram. I was like, but can you just like email me?
And
it was like,
confirmation.
And then I made her redo it because it was like, can I stay with you forever? XOXO. This is legally binding. It's not a thing. That's not how this works.
I was drunk and I sent a Hannah saying, you're stuck with me forever, you sexy bitch. XOXO. You responded with a really professional email being like, please, can you resend this as it needs to be legally binding? And then you had a kid.
It probably is still, but.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've said it on camera now. So, but then a kid on a scooter charged at you and face planted you in the crotch. And then
and I went down as well like a man. I went, oh, yeah, it was like a big headbutt.
Yeah, the kid was moving fast.
And then I fell off the curb after and almost got hit by a black cab.
Yeah, because I'm also scared of pigeons, so I screamed a little bit. There was a weird pigeon, like, coming towards me. Hannah went into the road, almost got run over by a black cab, and, yeah, we're still here a year later. That's my...
Tell the tale, but...
My re-signing party.
It was... I don't know if anything will beat that.
No, we'll have to do it bigger and better this year. It's a challenge.
We're going to get a human to headbutt me in the crotch. I'm not really sure.
Any takers, to be fair, if you put this out...
No, don't say any
takers. There will be a lot of people that'll be interested.
There's only one man for me. Anyway, apart from that, it's supposed to be a very serious business podcast.
Sorry.
We wrap everything up with the same sort of question. Similar to how you do it on yours, shockingly enough.
surprise, surprise.
But if you were to manage a part of your life differently, how would you do that? Because this industry does take its toll on your personal life, your dating life, your professional life, you know, everything, you know, and you can really lose yourself. So is there anything in particular that you would want to manage a little bit differently?
Ooh. What could I manage differently? I'm a bit of a control freak, you know this. So I feel like I like to have, because I read my emails before everyone else does, and it really annoys people.
That really winds
me up. I'm a massive control
freak.
Because
she doesn't even unread them. So then she goes, have you seen this? I'm like, nope.
Yeah,
because she hasn't unread it.
I'm a big control freak, so I feel like I manage a lot of things, but I think they're not always effective because this is deep now. I have issues with trusting people to do stuff that I ask them to do. Not you, not HLD. Outside of work stuff, I find it very hard to trust. Like if I say to somebody, please, can you do this? And they don't, then I know they're not going to do it. So I have to, if I just don't trust
them. You're a micromanager, naturally. No, I think you're not like without us, but what? Well, you're not like
not
it
with
work.
Us,
but in terms of your life, you micromanage things.
My personal
things,
life, I'm a massive micromanager.
You micromanage your parents, for sure.
I know they're going to watch this as well. So they're going to be like, yeah, preach. Rude. Yeah, no. Oh, yeah, I do. I do.
That's just
a fact. Yeah, maybe less micromanagement in my personal life. I think it would alleviate a lot of stress.
Yeah.
I'm getting there. It will come with age.
Thank you so much for watching this episode of Managed. If you loved watching, please make sure you're following us so you can receive updates on our next episode. I'll see you next week.